Well, this hour, we're going to talk about artificial intelligence. Just how smart can it get and what will happen to us when it gets to that point? We'll be back in a moment as we go live to Hong Kong in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Well, let me tell you a little bit about Dr. Ben Goertzel. He has a PhD in math, currently working mostly on artificial intelligence and various applications. He's written a book called The Cosmist Manifesto, Practical Philosophy for the Post-Human Age. He's with us this hour on Coast to Coast. Ben, welcome to the program. How are you, sir?
Oh, pretty good.
Looking forward to this. Artificial intelligence, and it keeps getting better, doesn't it?
Yeah, AI gets a little better each year, but for sure the best is yet to come.
Ben, tell me a little bit about you and how you got involved in working on artificial intelligence.
Well, I've been interested in AI ever since I was a young child and read about intelligent robots in science fiction novels. But at that time when I was a kid, I didn't realize I'd actually get a chance to work on making AI real during my lifetime. I did my PhD degree in mathematics, which was an interesting thing to study, but shortly after graduating, I decided it would be a lot more exciting to spend my career trying to build thinking machines, and that's what I'm working on, trying to make computers that think as well as people and ultimately way better.
Will they be emotional in the future, Ben? Will they have that kind of human trait?
I don't see why AIs would have exactly the same emotions as people unless they had the same bodies as people. Mm-hmm. But I think AIs will have their own kinds of emotions. I don't think they'll be like Mr. Data in Star Trek. I think that's just a fiction.
You talk a lot about singularity, and what's your take on that, your definition?
The technological singularity is generally thought of as a point in time at which the progress of science and technology becomes so rapid that from the point of view of the human mind, it's essentially infinite. My friend Ray Kurzweil has done a bunch of curve plotting, trying to extrapolate current trends in technology, and his view is that we're going to hit a singularity sometime around 2045, which is pretty damn soon in the grand scheme of things, although a fairly long time in terms of our individual human lives.
And it could be even sooner than that, believe it or not, the way things are moving.
It could be. As Niels Bohr, the founder of quantum physics, said, it's difficult to predict, especially the future. And, I mean, there's some wisdom to that. I think Ray's estimate of 2045 is a rational one. On the other hand, we could see a singularity in 2020, or we could see it drag on till 2100, the end of the century, if we run into unforeseen problems. I'm certainly working to bring a positive singularity about sooner rather than later, because there's a lot of problems in the world that advanced technology is going to be able to solve once it gets a little further along.
Is there any downside to this, Ben? Do you see anything out there that could be frightening for the human race?
There certainly are risks associated with the singularity, just like there are risks associated with any advanced technology. Lasers could potentially be used to make laser guns orbiting the Earth and shooting people down. That was President Reagan's Star Wars idea. On the other hand, as we see now, we have lasers used in surgery. We have lasers used inside CD players and scanners.
Yeah.
Any powerful technology could be used for good or for bad. Right now, we see more of the good than the bad in the world around us in terms of how technology is used. And I'm fairly optimistic that will continue to be the case. I think in science fiction movies and TV shows, it's always more exciting to make the killer robot army marching around blowing everybody up than to make the robot doctor curing people's cancer. But I'm hopeful we're going to see more of the robot doctor than the robot warrior.
That would be dramatic. I'd love to see that, too. There are two phrases, artificial intelligence and another one, artificial general intelligence. What's the difference there?
When the AI field was founded back in the late 1950s, the founders of AI were thinking about AI to think like people do, or even more generally than people do. But that problem proved pretty difficult to solve, given the computers at that time. So the field of AI went in a direction of increasing specialization. It went in a direction of making programs that solve very specific problems in very specific contexts. And this led to some useful stuff. I mean, it led to the AI we see in games. It led to Deep Blue that could beat the world champion at chess. It led to AI stock prediction programs. It led to AI programs for credit card fraud detection, planning and scheduling, the AI inside of Google's search engine and ad placement engine. All these are AI applications, which are really cool, but they're not going in the direction that the founders of AI were thinking of in terms of human-level thinking machines like R2-D2 or C-3PO or robot Einstein scientists or whatever. So AGI, or Artificial General Intelligence, is a concept some of us AI researchers have introduced to really refer to the good old-fashioned AI in the sense that it was meant in the 1950s, to refer to AI that's about making thinking machines with their own general intelligence, their own self, their own autonomy and ability to understand the world.
When earlier science writers talked about artificial intelligence way gone back, did they hit the mark, Ben, in terms of projecting when it would happen? Were they pretty close?
I think that the early AI researchers had a huge variety of estimates of how long it would take, actually. I don't think there was a consensus. It did happen that some of the early AI researchers, say Marvin Minsky, who's still around today, actually, he made conjectures in the 1960s that, yeah, we'll have obsoleted human beings for a lot of jobs by the mid-1970s. He thought we would have human-level AI by, say, 1975, 1980, or something like that. And, of course, that didn't happen. And the whole set of ideas that those early AI researchers were pursuing are now largely considered obsolete.
You could look
in the same way at the history of flying machines, of course, because before the Wright brothers, there was all kinds of people trying to make pedal-powered helicopters and wings that you strap on your back and jump off a cliff and try to fly and all sorts of cockamamie flying contraptions. And there was a long history of failure, such that many of the world's great scientists thought that human flight would never be possible. But then as it turned out, the Wright brothers just went ahead and did it, not necessarily because they were smarter than the ones coming before them who had tried and failed. I mean, Leonardo da Vinci tried to make a flying machine and didn't succeed. Leonardo was probably smarter than the Wright brothers.
Yeah.
But the supporting technologies were there for the Wright brothers that in a way that they weren't at the time of Leonardo. And I think the same is true now. We have the supporting technologies in terms of hardware and software to build AGI systems. And computers in 1970 just sucked. They weren't good enough to build an advanced AI on, even if you had the right idea.
And what's so amazing, too, is the size of the computers back in the 70s compared to what they are now and the firepower we've got with these computers today. It's amazing,
well, yeah,
right. Isn't it?
I mean, my phone now has the power of a supercomputer from back then.
I know. You know, when you send a text message to someone, you can hit your little microphone and speak it, and your smartphone types it out for you. It's amazing. I love that kind of technology.
Yeah, and it's interesting that technology was not foreseen by the same guys who foresaw AI coming in the mid-1970s. So they thought some things would come sooner than they did, and other amazing things like the internet and mobile phones. I didn't first see it all. It reminds me of some old science fiction novels. You had these huge starships going from star to star, and you had people walking up and down staircases on the starships. You know, they didn't bother to put elevators in the starships.
How smart, Ben, can these artificial intelligence machines get?
I don't think we can know what the limit is. That's sort of like asking a cockroach, how smart could a human get? All we can know is, hey, we can make machines that are way smarter than us. And how much further it could go than human beings is something for the AIs to figure out. There's only so far a being can see beyond its own intelligence level.
What are we limited to? What can hold us back from really just taking off with us?
I don't think anything is going to hold us back from creating AIs that are much smarter than we are. It can happen faster or slower, depending on the amount of energy and attention and money that go into AI research as opposed to other things. But it's not going to be stopped. I think attention and funding could make the difference between human-level AI happening in 2020 or 2080. But it's going to happen. I mean, humanity is on that trajectory. We've been making smarter and smarter and more powerful machines at an accelerating pace for quite some time now. I mean, if the U.S. went nuts and said, no more smart machines in America, so what? China's going to make the smart machines. You know, there's no way you're going to get everyone to agree to stop that development, because that's what people want to do. People want to build stuff that's better and better, smarter and smarter, cooler and cooler, does more and more things. And as Ray Kurzweil has pointed out in his arguments for the singularity, this is happening at a faster and faster pace.
Will we ever get to the point where, and here's a bizarre example, Ben, but we've got this artificial intelligence computer and Russia would, and somebody decides, you know what, we're going to launch, we're going to send nukes at them. And the computers, the artificial intelligence computers, begin to talk with each other, back to Russia, back to the United States, and they reason and say, this is crazy. We're not going to launch. We're shutting it down. Is that ever possible?
I would never want to rule anything out as impossible, because the future has brought humanity so many unexpected things and so many amazing surprises. I would say that in terms of the U.S. military's development of AI, they always place a large premium on making AIs that are predictable and reliable and will do what they're told. This is one of the reasons why I think the first really advanced AGI systems probably won't come from the military. I mean, would you put a little kid in charge of a gun or a nuclear weapon?
Nope.
Probably not.
No
way.
But
the first AGIs we get, in effect, they're going to be like young children. They're going to be just barely learning about the world. So the military really needs AIs that are reliable and predictable. And I think that's a bit hard to do in the early stages of building general intelligence. So I think the scenario you described, where there's a military robot that refuses to obey orders,
mm-hmm.
that's certainly not impossible. But I would say that the military is explicitly trying not to make that happen. And if they succeed in making advanced AIs, they may be ones that are very inclined to pay attention to what their superiors tell them.
Of course, you know, people we elect, for example, are subject to human frailties and human mistakes and greed and corruption and everything else. Is it possible that one day governments will have computers running government, and, you know, computers will figure out, how do we get through this economic mess? How do we create more jobs? How do we end famine? Would computers do that?
Absolutely. I think that understanding the modern complex economy is something that AIs will be way better at than human beings. When you think about what the human mind evolved for, and then compare it to the modern human world, the difference is striking. We evolved to run around in the African savanna and find mates and hunt and gather food and romp around outdoors naked and have a good time. Instead, we're faced with this incredibly complex modern world in which money flows through all these abstract derivatives and other financial instruments, and computers are passing massive amounts of information around all the time. This is not what our minds were evolved to deal with. We were evolved to deal with a situation where we lived outdoors around a few hundred people at most. A computer won't have the same evolutionary heritage as us, and it won't have the same evolved restrictions as us. So one could make an AI that took to the modern economy as naturally as we take to running around naked outside, hunting and gathering for food. And the same thing that holds for the economy holds for various areas of science. Look at something like, you know, molecular biology. We have a hard time thinking about what causes cancer. There's all these confusing little molecules and chemicals. Our brains were not evolved to think about these things. But if you make an AI that can see through a microscope and that can see the flows of money in bits across the internet as naturally as we see a landscape in front of us with our eyes, this AI is going to be able to reason about these things like molecular biology or the flow of money in jobs just much better than a human being can. So I'm almost certain an advanced AI could fix the economy by just better understanding, well, if I adjust the interest rates and give money to this sector of the economy, what's likely to happen?
That's a good point.
Much of a clue. We kind of figured it out by trial and error, and I think an AI could do better.
Maybe one day we'll even see a Republican and Democratic candidates that will be AR machines. People will be voting for the
possible
machines.
However, the president is largely a figurehead anyways in this day and age.
Sure.
And most of the management is done behind the scenes. So what I think you'll see first is the shadow government who actually run things being largely artificial intelligences, and then you still need the human beings to give speeches and make people feel comfortable with what the AI has done and to take responsibility for the AI's decisions.
Will we ever get to the point, Ben, where these artificial intelligent machines, these robots, will look so human-like because of course, you know, technology, and I think they could probably get very close now, but with the personality, with the intelligence, you could be standing next to one in a crowd, and you might not even know it. Is that possible?
To make an AI that's indistinguishable from a human being.
Yes.
Certainly that's possible. The biggest challenge there is probably on the robotic side. You're talking about simulating
movement,
a human body in detail as well as the human mind. And this is, of course, a different sort of thing. Ultimately, I think that's one of the many things that's going to happen, but may not be the most interesting thing. The human body evolved as it did for certain reasons, but it has many limitations. For example, we can't fly. We don't have wheels. We can't see out of the back of our heads. I mean, if you were a robot and could make your body however you wanted, why would you want to adopt all these limitations of the human body? I'd rather augment myself in a lot of ways if I could.
Ben, but stay with us. We're going to take this quick break. You're live in Hong Kong. We're going to come back with you and take some phone calls in a moment with our special guest, Dr. Ben Gertzel. His book, A Cosmist Manifesto, Practical Philosophy for the Post-Human Age. We'll be back. And, of course, we're going to take your phone calls now with Ben as we talk about artificial intelligence, his book, A Cosmist Manifesto. So we'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Hey, Ben, before we take calls, you've relocated to Hong Kong. Tell me why.
Sorry, what was that?
You've relocated to Hong Kong. Tell me why.
Well, partly I've relocated to Hong Kong purely out of a love for adventure. It's a fascinating place. But I've also found it easier to get my AI projects funded here than I was in the U.S. And I think China is booming now, and they're interested in putting money into all sorts of adventurous technology projects. So it's going to be really interesting to see what happens in this part of the world in the next couple of decades. We may see the Singularity launched in China rather than the U.S., or, of course, it may be an international phenomenon initially. After it gets started, of course, it will be an international phenomenon and beyond the Earth.
Are we lagging behind in the United States with this kind of technology and research?
I would say the United States is still the clear leader in most kinds of advanced scientific research. We're lagging behind in some kinds of engineering that are relevant. I don't think anyone in the U.S. knows how to build a commercial robot, for example. That's all done in Asia. In the U.S., robots are designed, and then they're built over here. But in terms of the pure scientific research, I think the U.S. is still in the lead, and this is both a plus and a minus. Because the U.S. is in the lead, the scientific establishment is somewhat complacent. They already think they know everything. They aren't always that interested in exploring wacky new approaches. Whereas out here in Asia, because they know that the U.S. is the world's scientific leader, they want to leapfrog ahead. So they're willing to take gambles on crazy new ideas, like my own work on trying to make advanced artificial intelligences.
One of my favorite Twilight Zone episodes, I Sing the Body Electric by Ray Bradbury, and talked to Ray about that some time ago. But this was a great episode about a family that they lost the mother. She died. And so he went to the robot store and he got a new nanny. And then when the kids grew up, they gave the nanny back to another family, and it went on and on. That could probably happen, I think, Ben.
Absolutely. I think a robot nanny and a robot housekeeper are going to be among the first general widespread consumer applications of advanced AI, even before we see a full-fledged singularity. And I for one, will appreciate that a great deal. I'm a lot better at computer programming than cleaning my house.
Let's go to the calls. Greg in Las Vegas, Nevada, you're with us, first-time caller. Hi, Greg, go ahead.
How you doing tonight?
Good, Greg, thank you.
Yeah, I read a book years ago called When Harley Was One.
And I know that novel.
That was a novel.
Old science fiction novel. I remember that.
Yeah, and the gist of it was that the total AI thing was so complicated that it would take years to get feedback from it.
Well, when Harley was one, as I recall, they did build a human-level AI system that talked to you just like a person.
What does it take, Ben, when you have this laboratory, what does it look like? I mean, it's not full of test tubes and things. It's full of what? Computers? Hardware?
Right now, our work is programming. It's a bunch of Chinese guys and American guys, European guys, sitting at machines, typing into their computer. And we do have a couple of robots. We don't actually take them out every day. Most of what we do is software work. So the lab does not look as exciting as a biology lab or a cyclotron or something like that. All the excitement is inside the computer, really.
By the way, I heard that you signed up with Alcor to have your body frozen cryogenically. They've got Ted Williams, the baseball player's head. One day they're hoping that they can clone him and download his brain.
Absolutely. I mean, I would like to live forever. I have no interest in dying. I enjoy being alive. And what with the singularity very likely coming, life is going to get an awful lot more exciting, even better than it is now. So, yeah, being alive seems a lot more appealing than being dead. I don't really want to be frozen in liquid nitrogen. I'd just like to live forever, either in my human form or uploading my brain into a computer or a robot, you know, fly around through outer space, live in a virtual world, experience as many new things as I can. But, you know, if bad luck were to happen and I was to get hit by a truck and come down with cancer or something, sure, I'd rather be frozen than rotten. Yeah. I think if I were preserved in liquid nitrogen, then the structure of my brain, which contains my knowledge and my memories and myself, is going to be preserved, and there's some possibility that in future I could be reconstituted either by my human body being defrosted and then fixed using future medical technology, or by my mind stuff being scanned out of my brain and put into a robot or whatnot.
Well, and let me ask you about that, Ben. How realistic is that one day to be able to download memory from a human brain and put it on some chip into a robot? Or because if that's possible and the brain has got all the memory we've now got, which basically is us, we literally live forever then.
Absolutely. I mean, we can't know whether we can literally live forever. The universe itself may collapse in a few billion years, but the historical lifespan of the human body doesn't have to be our limit anymore. And I think all this is very feasible. If you look at what modern science tells us, it's all just configurations of atoms and particles. I mean, your brain is a configuration of atoms and particles in a certain arrangement, and a computer is an arrangement of atoms and particles in another arrangement. Your mind is not in the specific cells or molecules in your brain. Your mind is in the pattern of arrangement. It's in the way the things are organized inside of you. And if you duplicate that pattern of arrangement inside a robot's brain, that robot is going to have the same thoughts as you. It's going to have the same feelings as you. It's going to say it's you. And then whether it really is you or not becomes a question for the philosophers to ponder while everybody else goes on living and having a good time.
Let's go to Daniel, Fort Wayne, Indiana, on our Skype line. Go ahead, Daniel.
Yes, hello. My question is, how does human augmentation towards transcendence relate to religious ideas of transcendence, in that the Cosmos Manifesto, as far as I understand the title, might refer to matter and energy, but there's people around that talk about spirit, and maybe spirit is something that goes beyond our cosmos and we don't yet fully understand it. So open question on how these might be similar or different, and thank you for taking my call.
Okay. Do you touch onto that spirituality end of this, Ben?
I do touch those issues to some extent in my book, and I do, as a human being, I intuitively feel that there is some spiritual aspect to the universe that goes beyond what science can touch. I don't think science and engineering necessarily can tell you everything about life and the universe. On the other hand, I don't see that as an obstacle to doing all these amazing things with technology and building thinking machines and moving your mind into another robot body and so forth. The fact that there is some other spiritual aspect to life doesn't imply that these amazing technologies can't happen. In terms of the transcendence that we're going to achieve through the singularity and how it compares to the transcendence foreseen by religions in the past, I think the big difference is that we can actually do it now. I mean, Christians traditionally thought, sure, the world was going to end in the year 1000, then the year 2000, or whatever, but it didn't happen, and it's not like they had a rational, logical methodology for making it happen. You know, in the year 1000, the Anabaptists thought you go dance on top of the mountain, and that's going to help the judgment day to come, but this was based on belief and ideology rather than logic and reasoning and measurement. And the transcendence that we see potentially coming from a singularity, this is based on science, mathematics, and rational thinking. It could be wrong. I don't have an absolute faith that a singularity will come. It's not a religious thing. But the fact that there's some overlap between the religious visions of the past and the vision of a singularity, it's interesting. It may be significant, but it doesn't mean they're the same thing.
Do you ever see the day where computers literally will become psychics, where they can see into the future?
Ah, that's a whole other question. The nature of anomalous phenomena like ESP, precognition, psychokinesis, and so forth. Personally, I tend to believe these phenomena do exist in the universe, even though there's a lot of frauds and liars out there confusing the matter with fakery. And I think these are phenomena that human beings have done a very bad job of understanding for a variety of reasons. It's quite possible that advanced AIs will understand the universe better than us, and we'll finally understand what the hell is going on with all these strange phenomena. So, yeah, I think that's possible. I also think there's going to be limitations that we can't now foresee. But that's one among many interesting things that AI is much more intelligent than us may be able to unravel.
Will they, and we talked earlier in the show about emotion, will they ever get to the point where they will have that kind of emotion, where they could cry like a human being?
Crying, of course, relies on having human eyes with tear ducts.
Yeah.
So that relies on an AI not only having an intelligent mind, but having a human-like body. It would certainly be possible to engineer an advanced AI that would feel sad and cry like a person.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure how useful that is. I do think that AIs will have their own emotions that may be very different than ours, but I see no reason why they couldn't be just as intense as ours or more so. But there should be significant differences.
Yeah.
We humans have very limited control over our own bodies and our own brains. We can't say, damn, I'm really miserable, but I'd like to be happy. Let me reprogram my brain to make myself happy. We can try to do that with drugs, but those are very blunt instruments. They have all kinds side effects. They're addictive. They make you throw up. And AI, in principle, should be able to have far more control over its own mind than we have, so as to be able to direct its emotions in the directions that it wants. And that may lead to a lot of new problems as well as a lot of wonderful new things.
Well, what if that emotion turns to anger, Ben? What happens then?
That's entirely possible, but I think we need to refrain from anthropomorphizing too much. Why do human beings experience so much anger? We experience anger because with the human body being the way it is, feeling angry actually makes us stronger. I mean, if I'm angry, I can beat the hell out of someone better than if I'm calm and relaxed. We evolved to get angry because we evolved to need to survive in a very violent and difficult situation where there were other animals who wanted to kill us and other people who wanted to steal our women and so forth. And AI isn't necessarily going to evolve in that kind of situation, so it's not necessarily going to have such a propensity to anger as human beings have. I think a lot of the future is going to depend on our choices. Yeah, if the first people to develop super intelligent AIs are military people developing AIs to kill, you may wind up with AIs that are very angry, and this may lead to all sorts of problems down the road. On the other hand, if the first really advanced AIs are, say, social workers, doctors, and nannies, anger is unlikely to be a dominant feature of their emotional makeup. They're going to grow up with helping people as being a primary emotion.
True. Michael in Asheville, North Carolina. We'll squeeze you in here. Go ahead, Michael.
Good morning, guys.
Hey.
Who's to say AIs aren't involved in our society right now, whether alien or military, and what a better way to gather intelligence?
Hmm. Could it be possible, Ben?
You know, you can never rule anything out, but it seems pretty unlikely. And part of the reason I think that's unlikely is that the government is not particularly good at gathering intelligence. I mean, if we had all these brilliant AIs spying for us, wouldn't we have caught Osama a lot sooner? I mean, we can't even stop drug dealers from importing drugs out of Mexico and the Caribbean, you know?
Yeah,
so
that's right.
I don't see any great superintelligence underlying the U.S. government's surveillance activities, for example. And for another point, there's been no pattern of U.S. government agencies like hiring all the smartest AGI researchers and cognitive scientists for some black project, which is what I would have expected to have seen if they were brewing something like that. An example would be code breaking. Now, the NSA, a U.S. government agency, is really, really good at code breaking. But it's no mystery how they got that way. For decades, they hired all the best graduates in cryptography and various related branches of math from all the best universities. Everyone who knew the kinds of math relevant to code breaking got hired into the NSA, and yet now they can crack codes great. But the government hasn't been hiring all the AI guys like that. And probably that's because they're actually not doing any big secret AI research program.
The name of the book, A Cosmist Manifesto. Dr. Ben Goertzel, thank you so much for being on the program. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudasur, Stephanie Smith, Ross Mitchell, George Knapp, John B. Wells, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell. I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.